This News Talk 1010 podcast is brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.
Good morning, I'm Jerry Agar. This situation we're in, who would have known? Who knew? Who could have predicted it? Nobody could have. Well, wait a minute. Maybe somebody could. How about my next guest? Senior External Affairs Manager, Global Health Security Agenda Consortium Chair Emeritus, Ashley Arabasadi. Good morning.
Good morning, Jerry. How are you?
I am well. Can you say that this could have been predicted, was predicted?
I think that everybody who works in health security, especially around infectious diseases, has been banging on this drum for years. So could we have predicted it would be this exact scenario with a coronavirus? Probably not, but we've been asking for attention around pandemic preparedness plans for decades.
All right. And, you know, we learned so much when we went through SARS, and then it turns out we didn't learn a whole lot.
We do have this cycle, and that we, everybody, the global we have this cycle of kind of panic and neglect where something happens, everybody is up in arms, there's a lot of attention, a lot of funding, a lot of response, then it's over and everyone goes, woof, gosh, that's a relief, and then we just kind of forget that it happens. I'll say, though, that government leadership and globally, there's been a big commitment of different countries across the world who've come together and said, we can't kind of let these things happen again, and since 2014, there's been a lot of momentum to help prevent, detect, and respond to infectious disease threats. And that's called the Global Health Security Agenda, of which the U.S. and Canada are both members.
All right. So I'm talking to Ashley Arabasadi, who's the Senior External Affairs Manager, Global Health Security Agenda. And so are you hugely frustrated right now where you're saying, look, in addition to the problems we have right now, like we tried to tell you.
So I've learned that finger shaking and I told you so doesn't work very well at my house. So okay. We try not to do that kind of globally. But we do say now that, you know, we know kind of from the playbook, here's where countries are. Here's what we need to do to move forward. Let's focus on that. Let's focus on keeping people safe, focus on keeping people alive. And let's now work with our government counterparts to put effective legislation in place so that we can get the country back on its feet, but be better prepared for where we will be rather than where we are right now.
Okay, let me bring it down to a more local thing here and see how you respond to this. We had a situation where we had SARS. Toronto was particularly badly hit. And then something that came out of that was a stockpile of personal protective equipment. But then over the years, they decided that it was outdated or whatever the deal was, and they started to get rid of it. But they weren't replacing it. Now, at least to her credit, Kathleen Wynne, who was premier when all this was happening, apologized last Friday on the show. She said she has to wear it. She's responsible for that. But do you think maybe second time around we'll learn, and that once we get through all of this, we'll make those kinds of supplies, we'll fill a storehouse somewhere with these supplies, keep them up to date, and get it together?
I mean, that's really always the goal. I think that there are issues with our national stockpile and ours being, you know, the global kind of national stockpile of various countries. Listen, these things don't always last forever. There's medicines that we stockpile that have expiration dates, PPE as well that can only be stored for X amount of years before, you know, we need to replace them. Now, that's where the issue kind of lies. And it's fantastic to hear an official taking responsibility for that and saying, you know, working to go forward, this is what needs to happen. I'm hopeful as well that we will look in the U.S. at how we stock our national stockpile, how we distribute that to the states, and then how we keep an adequate supply kind of in inventory so that we aren't caught flat-footed when something large like this happens.
How did you feel when, as a person from Global Health Security Agenda, when temporarily for 24, 36 hours or whatever it was, President Trump told 3M in Canada that Canada can't have any masks?
I mean, that is a little bit above my pay grade. I work for Management Sciences for Health, which is a nonprofit organization. I think that is definitely a great question for a political pundit.
All right, then. Do you think governments in general, now that we are where we are, we can always look back and finger point, but now that we are where we are, how do you think that the Canadian government, the American government, how are they doing?
You know, I think that this is For better or for worse, this is a moment in history that we have. We have an opportunity now to really look ahead and put these pandemic preparedness plans in place. We have the opportunity to make effective legislation. I think it will really be a testament going forward on what we can learn from this. You know, we have an opportunity to strengthen health systems, not only internally, but globally, that can help make everybody safer. And I really am looking forward to working with counterparts in my government around what legislation we can craft or help develop that will be impactful.
Ashley Arabasadi is Senior External Affairs Manager, Global Health Security Agenda Consortium. She's Chair Emeritus. So how different is it then for third world countries and for predicting and protecting there?
So we put a lot of money, and we, the U.S., Canada, others, have put a lot of money into strengthening health systems in low and middle income countries. What we always fear is that a epidemic or a pandemic event is going to take root in countries that have fragile or non-functioning health systems and be completely overwhelmed. If you remember during Ebola, 2014 to 2016, there was fear that Liberia as a country would absolutely collapse. And that's what we don't want to see. And we're still struggling with getting countries back up and running, country, economy, nutrition, education, et cetera, all those things that kind of those dominoes that can collapse when you have an infectious disease outbreak. And that's what we don't want to see. We want to ensure that people have the resources, countries have the resources and the capacity to handle outbreaks and then stop them quicker at the source.
You're kind of the person, Ashley, who wants to fix the roof when it's not raining, and it doesn't seem like everybody else operates that way.
It's really funny. It's not just me. It's people within the health security community who've seen these warnings and seen these flags, and especially for my organization, Management Sciences for Health, that understand that if you don't have a health system that's functioning, you know, we're really only putting a Band-Aid when you need major surgery. You know, this is what we do, and this is where the best investment of funds can go, is strengthening the health system.
Do you have any kind of modeling? Do you do any kind of work on taking other people's modeling and can say you have any idea when we'll get through this?
I'm looking at models. We personally don't do the predictive modeling that, say, major universities like Johns Hopkins or others are using to see the peak. But I do want to caution that the peak just means the apex of the amount of cases that we're seeing. After that, we will see cases go down, but it's not kind of like turning on a faucet and letting the water gush out. It will be what we need to prepare for is that once the peak happens, you'll still see cases, though they will decrease. But that won't mean that a country, a city, a state automatically opens up and everything returns to life as usual. We just have to prepare for it's going to be a slow transition process.
Okay, we're getting more and more statistics that say that generally, though, the deaths are among the elderly. Does it make any sense to think that maybe to some degree the economy with younger people can reopen a little bit?
I mean, I think that we're seeing more and more cases of asymptomatic individuals, so people that aren't exhibiting symptoms, but that are carriers and can infect a lot of people. There's a very big, they're calling an R-naught, the amount of people that can be infected by one person, which is very large. I think at last models it was around 6, which means for every one person that has COVID-19, they can infect up to almost 6 people, and those people can infect up to 6 people. So I think we're still very much in this kind of we have to get this under control before we can really talk about the economy reopening. I don't think we're there yet, unfortunately.
Ashley Arabasadi is the Senior External Affairs Manager for Global Health Security Agenda Consortium, Chair Emeritus. I hope we can check back in with you. It was great to talk to you.
Absolutely. And Jerry, I'm not just saying this because I've only talked to my 2.5-year-old and my husband for a month, but it's been great talking to you.
I'm glad I beat the 2.5-year-old, but the husband's going to have to deal with his own issues. Thanks very much.
Take care and be safe.
All right. Thank you. This is News Talk 1010, and we're trying to bring you information like that on a consistent 24-hour basis. In fact, we are live here through the night as well with Jason Agnew on News Talk 1010.
This News Talk 1010 podcast was brought to you by PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca. Wrongfully dismissed? Changes made to your job? Lowballed on severance? Find out if you have a case before you call a lawyer. Go to PocketEmploymentLawyer.ca.